Welcome, everybody, to episode 242 of the Metabolus 2 podcast, which features myself, Ben.
And I am David, and long time no here,
we're back.
I guess.
We're back. We didn't go away. We're back. Michael Grade has reinstated us.
Yes, after we had a podcast in distress, all the celebrities that ever graced Metabolus 2 came together, formed a Northern Soul recording album. And
exactly, composed and arranged by Jess Jerkvic, our good friends. it could happen, but anyway.
Yeah, it didn't, but
yes,
you didn't miss much. So you were in Gallifrey.
And I was, yes.
And he got busy.
Life took over, yeah. So I think the last podcast you had from us was the kind of Gallifrey preview, and now it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been incredibly busy, weirdly. So we're back. and it was a good time. It is always a good time.
When did you get there? Did you get on a Thursday or Wednesday?
No, it's. I mean, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. So yeah, got there on the Thursday with my lovely mm-hmm. wife. And she actually left on Saturday to go down to San Diego, but I stayed in LA until Monday and, yeah, did the full Monty, basically. Though what is weird, as I think so often happens with Gallifrey, is there's some people who were there, some sort of, you know, actors,
mm-hmm.
who I didn't see at all because I was too busy doing other things. It is always, there is a lot of stuff programmed, and you cannot do it all, unfortunately.
Right.
So, you just got to suck it up, basically.
Yeah. Pick your battles, I guess, or pick what you're interested in.
Yeah, exactly. So, what did I actually get up to? Well...
So Thursday they had like a social, right?
Thursday I had the social and got down, did the social, went to the bar, had a few drinks, mm-hmm. and then was ready for Friday, mm-hmm. which was a fun day. I went in hard in the dealer's room, kind of first off, because I wanted to kind of cross a bunch of stuff off my list. I really wanted Billy Piper's signature on her autobiography, and I really uh-huh. wanted Matthew Waterhouse's signature as well, and I figured, okay, if I line up for those two first thing Friday morning and get them, then I can relax.
Were you successful?
I did that, yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
I was successful, mm-hmm. yeah. The line for Billy was really not that bad. I spent about 20 minutes in the line. That was fine.
Uh-huh.
And the line for Matthew was kind of non-existent.
Oh.
So straight in. And she's charming. And Billy Piper was lovely. She was there with her son.
Really?
Yes. No, I think it definitely was her son, which was nice. And she seemed mm-hmm. happy. And Matthew seemed happy. And I got their signatures. And that was very, very cool. And then straight from that to... I've forgotten his name now. Who's just written that book on...
Simon Guerrier?
Simon Guerrier, thank you. Right, you can just supply the names. I'll just, waffle for a bit. So I would say there was a Simon Guerrier panel. Simon Guerrier is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And he was presenting on David Whittaker, right?
Well, he was talking about... I mean, I was able to pick up a copy of his David Whittaker book, which mm-hmm. he, again, very kindly signed for me. And I have actually read that during our vacation in San Diego. And basically, he was just talking about how TV before Doctor Who kind of informed what Doctor Who was going to be like, mm-hmm. and how it also informed what the kind of choices that Whittaker made when he was kind of formulating or, you know, script editing, shaping the show. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating. So, you know, kind of into the unknown, Quatermass, but actually, you know, really kind of deeply talking about those things. Mm-hmm. And there was my mind's blanking now, but there was a report that was produced in the 50s about how to do science fiction for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that apparently, you know, very heavily informed how Whittaker shaped the show and made the show, you know, different and appealing to people. So mm-hmm. really very interesting. He's a very smart man, and again absolutely charming and a pleasure to meet. And of course, and straight from that I go into our good friend Lena Barkin's panel about studying Doctor Who. That was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Each of the contributors to the book that she's in, you know, gave a little spiel, and then it was straight into autographs for those guys,
mm-hmm.
and then straight into Derek Jacobi, full hour of Sir Derek.
Oh, yes.
And that was great. It was on the main stage, and he
right.
did two main stages. I mean, again, I didn't do both of them. I just did the first mm-hmm. one. And again, he's just a really charming man and very modest mm-hmm. about his accomplishments, which are massive, to be honest.
Right.
I mean, you know, you don't get a knighthood for you know, not being a good actor. You get him a knighthood for being a good actor. And very open about his challenges with stage fright. You know, his love, like a lot of British actors, you know, his love is the stage. But had a, in I think it was the early 70s, mid 70s, had a very, very bad bout of stage fright.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was doing Hamlet in Melbourne, in Australia, in Melbourne. And he was just about to launch into the to be or not to be soliloquy from Hamlet, which is obviously justifiably famous and also everybody knows it. And he couldn't remember it.
Huh.
And so anyway, so that's how he went into TV, he was saying. So, you know, I, Claudius and all the movies that he made. And but he was very, very modest about, you know, the TV that he's done. So things like Brother Cadwile, which, you know, which is a detective story.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's nothing special. And he didn't seem to be pretentious in any kind of way,
mm-hmm.
and was very passionate about Doctor Who, and very, very gratified to know to for everyone. You know, he did some line readings, some master line readings,
mm-hmm.
And everyone kind of applauded. And he seemed really kind of, you know, he was kind of not weeping, but you know, he was teary eyed
mm-hmm.
with the love that he was getting from the audience.
His stage performance led him into television work then, I guess.
This is the best. I mean, he went back to the stage. I mean, mm-hmm. he's been back to the stage since. But, I mean, in some ways, that's what made him the kind of international star, whatever he is.
I, Claudius, basically.
Well,
I
Claudius in the United yeah. States, which was on PBS, you know, made him a big star in the United States in some ways. And
mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, Claudius is interesting sort of from a Who perspective because there's so many Who people in it.
Yeah, true.
At least, you know, Brian Blessed and yeah. John Hurt and et cetera, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that was great. It was great. And he was, again, lovely man. I got his signature too. He has a very beautiful signature and he was charming and that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Then straight into interview with Matthew Waterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Again, really interesting guy. Had a lot to say. Obviously, you know, he's a grown-ass adult at this point.
Right.
So talking about his kind of awkwardness as being Adric was very interesting. You know, talking about neurodiversity and, you know, how he feels about himself and how, you know, if he feels Adric was the first kind of queer character in Doctor Who, the first kind of fully neurodiverse character. And that was very interesting.
Did he feel or think Adric was queer at the time that he was acting? Because that's how he was, or is this in retrospect?
No. But basically, you know, I didn't say this explicitly, but, you know, the implication was that Adric was himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just being himself.
So both him and Tom.
Exactly.
Just being themselves.
So no wonder they didn't get on, because, you know, they were being themselves. So yeah, it was very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, interesting dynamic with both Waterhouse and Tom Baker being themselves, essentially portraying the role. And I'm sure Lalo is actually acting and probably getting frustrated with both the male leads.
I think in the previous podcast, I kind of bemoaned a little bit how there wasn't a doctor at this convention. And Sean Lyons, his kind of introduction on Thursday evening, said, like, you know, I know there's not a doctor. There's not always a doctor. But I did feel the lack of Lala Ward because she was the other headliner
mm-hmm.
and then had to pull out a couple of months ago. And I think it would have just been solid gold to have Matthew and Lala on the same stage together mm-hmm. being interviewed. That would have been absolutely stunning, and I would have loved to have met Lala Ward
mm-hmm.
and have her seen her interviewed, but you know, there you go. But I think the curation of this year's Gallifrey very much seemed to have had a number of strands, and one of those strands was early 80s Doctor Who. But anyway, so yeah, there you go. Can't have everything.
Do you know if Lala's still in Hong Kong or is she?
I don't know. Yeah,
elsewhere.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, I can't remember why she pulled out. I think it was work commitments.
Not that she would be in on stage with Waterhouse then.
no, I think it was planned that they would be on stage together.
Well, if he's going, I'm
yeah,
not.
Exactly. Bastard Waterhouse.
Yeah, they got on famously when they were on the
yeah,
set. So
yeah,
sure.
No. Well, again, I mean, I think what's interesting now is that they're both more than grown up. They're, you know, in retirement.
Yeah.
So they can look back on those kind of youthful idiocy, you know, with a more professional eye. And then again, you know, obviously the thing about Lala Ward is she was a fully professional actor when she came into Doctor Who and did Hammer and blah blah
yeah.
blah, whereas Matthew Waterhouse literally wasn't. Mm-hmm. And like Tom, wasn't doing an acting job. He was just being himself.
Right.
And obviously there were going to be clashes on set, I think, when that kind of stuff happens.
I think they've done Big Finish.
Oh yeah, too, no, they've so. Done big. I mean, I don't think Nala Wood's done Big Finish for a while.
Yeah, I think it's been like 4 or 5 years since she was recorded any Big Finish. Yeah.
Though interestingly, and I can't remember which panel I was at, Jason Hay Ellery was obviously there, you know, and pushing Big Finish,
representing. Yep.
And let slip is the wrong word, but he said that basically they recorded Tom up until 2030. So they have a release schedule for Tom Baker recordings for the next at least five years, which I thought was interesting. So, you know, obviously they've been working the guy hard, or he's been happy to be worked hard,
right?
Given that by 2030, we may not have Tom Baker anymore.
Right. He's in his 90s now, or 90 now.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they kind of bank people's performances really far into the future.
I wonder if they're still recording with him, or if he is done. Yeah, okay, they didn't let on.
He didn't say. Mm-hmm. Then Billie Piper, great Billie Piper interview. That was fascinating, you know, hearing about her starting out in acting.
Was Doctor Who basically her first acting job?
Yeah, pretty much. She came straight off, you know, being a pop. Well, she wanted to be an actor. Mm-hmm. And then ended up being a pop star by mistake, which she said she didn't really enjoy that much. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Doctor Who kind of allowed her to do what she really wanted to do. And, you know, then she obviously, when she finished with Who, she did a lot of parts that were kind of opposites. You know, she took that kind of advice that you've got to sort of, you know, avoid the typecasting that can happen with Doctor Who actors.
That's why she probably went in Diary of a Call Girl and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that was Diary of a Call Girl. And now she's doing a lot of directing. Mm-hmm. And was very, you know, they needed to be more women directing, and she's now a director. So, yeah, again, good luck to her on that one.
She sounds very grounded.
Oh, God, she was, like, absolutely solid, yes. Mm-hmm. No kind of actorial flim-flam with her. Mm-hmm. She's incredibly career-oriented and just absolutely grounded.
Eccleston really credited her for the success, early success of the Return series. And did she have much to say on her time with Chris?
Yeah, I think that's obviously typical Chris. You know, he will compliment everybody but himself.
Right.
they didn't really touch on the reasons for Chris leaving.
Of course.
But she was very, very, you know, she learned a huge amount from him, is what she was saying. Because again, he was a very seasoned actor. He'd been acting for, you know, a decade and a half or so, and before he landed Who.
Yeah.
So that was fun. It was fun to see her. And then straight from that, I had my own panel. No, sorry. I went to a Target book panel with Gary Russell and like Target book writers. That was interesting.
Any breaking news? I guess I'm probably focusing in on the new series novelizations, right?
Yeah, there was no breaking news other than, you know, it's fun to write a Doctor Who novel, and it's fun to take the, you know, 45/50 minutes of story and turn it into a novel.
Right.
That was the kind of... and then it was a lot of, you know, obviously love for Terrence Dix and love for Malcolm Hulk, you know, the kind of old school writers.
Yeah.
And then I was straight into my own panel, The Truth Is Out There, which is about AI. And that was actually... It was very sparsely attended, obviously, because, you know, it was 6:30 in the evening and people are kind of like, oh, I don't want to go to any more panels now. But it was a lot. It was really interesting. I had a lot of fun. I'm not going to be able to remember the names of my three other panelists, but they were all aligned. Two women who were aligned to kind of, you know, computers.
Nicole Carson and Valerie Frankel.
Exactly. One of them worked in AI in hospital environments, which is kind of interesting. And then there was a bloke, and you're going to tell me his name?
Eric Evan.
There you go. Who was a writer, but I was the only person who on the panel who was talking about AI from the visual perspective. They were all interested in AI in terms of writing, and the woman who worked with, you know, hospital with a medical AI, how that artificial intelligence can help with diagnosis and writing doctor's notes, which is something I hadn't thought about before. You know, the kind of notes the doctors have to churn out. That can easily be done by intelligence. However, the consensus was it's a bad thing, and certainly for writers,
yeah,
it's a bad thing. And for artists, it's a huge threat. And we mm-hmm. talked about, you know, well, there is a... So we can certainly see a future where you throw a script into a machine. You ask a machine to write a script, and then you throw that machine-generated script into another machine that makes a movie.
Right.
And the whole thing is automated. And if you look at... This is one of the points I was sort of making. If you look at, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which started out very strongly, but is now kind of, you know, is sort of almost churning AI-generated movies out now.
Hmm.
And we still go and watch them, and we still think they're great. And I think the danger with AI is that, like, no one's really going to care that much.
Mm-hmm.
And the point being with artificially intelligence-generated creative material, it can never be original. It can only be based on what people have already... It has to be derivative.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, opens up interesting questions about the nature of creativity. You know, is creativity always derivative?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there such thing as a genuinely new idea?
Right.
Which is something AI could literally never have, certainly as we currently see them. But anyway, it was really interesting. I can't remember whether I touched on this on the last podcast, but because I haven't listened to that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the only bright thing on the horizon, point that I made, is that one could imagine a future where a very, very clever artificial intelligence can take the camera script of Lost Doctor Who episodes and the telesnaps of Lost Doctor Who episodes and create Lost episodes for us.
That's a few years away, if ever, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly see it as a possibility,
mm-hmm.
especially given that camera scripts for 60s Who are incredibly detailed
mm-hmm.
because you have to plan the studio as a director. You literally have to plan the movement of cameras.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more detail
mm-hmm.
that, if you could train a computer to understand and read that detail... I think the difficulty there is, like, well, who the hell would fund that? But I don't know. I see it as a possibility.
So it's certainly a possibility, but I think you still need someone like a Gav Rydmill there to lovingly recreate in 3D the sets and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think it would be a collaborative mm-hmm. effort. And again, it would have to be very well funded. We need a tech billionaire who's a Doctor Who fan.
Right.
We don't have one. We need that. So that's Friday. I just had a quick question
with the AI generation stuff. Is this being driven by kind of taking a lazy approach to creating, for lack of a better word, content? Try to make a quick buck?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, one of the points I think we were all making in the panel is that if you think big entertainment companies aren't literally only about making money,
mm-hmm.
then you're wrong, because they are literally only about making money. And if Disney can churn out another episode of the MCU using an AI-generated script and AI-generated images, then they will.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of the recent extra strike in Hollywood, is people, you know, not wanting to lose the rights to their own images
right.
that would then populate completely computer-generated movies. And again, one of the things that we very briefly touched on, you know, was the recent Indiana Jones movie where they de-aged Harrison Ford for the first 20 minutes of the film. And the point being, it's like, well, why are you bothering to do that? You could just have a computer-generated Harrison Ford. What is the point? Because a de-aged Harrison Ford is effectively a computer-generated Harrison Ford.
Right.
So, you know, when Harrison Ford is dead, which, you know, will happen at some point in the future,
mm-hmm.
we can still have movies with him in it forever.
Right.
So, you know, this is where we're kind of going to. And I think, I'm now extemporating a little bit, there was a little bit of kerfuffle on the internet the last couple of days. I can't remember where the statement had come from, but I think it was someone from the BBC marketing group was saying, well, the Doctor Who is an ideal show for developing AI content.
Hmm.
Because, you know, it's brightly lit, it's fantasy, the characters are really strongly delineated in terms mm-hmm. of costume. There's very little light and shade. You know, it is mm-hmm. it is a very kind of forefronted show. And it's an ideal opportunity to experiment.
Yeah, I think what the person's really saying is Doctor Who fans buy everything and anything. Just look at the crap animations that we've been putting out.
They still buy them. Yeah, and actually, I can't remember which night it was now. I think it was one of the days I sat in on a couple of episodes of the new... it was on Saturday morning, actually. There you go. A couple of episodes of the new Underwater Menace animation.
Oh, Saturday morning cartoons.
It was okay. I'm not buying a third version of the Underwater Menace. I'm kind of done with Underwater Menace at this point, and particularly with that kind of Saturday morning cartoon Scooby-Doo animation. I think we've said this before on the podcast. If only they would actually do a Scooby-Doo style animation rather than trying this kind of uneasy conflation of it's Doctor Who, but they're running in a really unconvincing way in front of a static background. You know, I wish it was more cartoony because, you know, it's a very cartoony story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Zaroff is over the top cartoon character.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, why not just go full cartoon on it? Especially since you're going to redesign everything. And I love the original fish people. I think they look fantastic. Mm-hmm. But they are completely different. I mean, you have the animation, right? You watched
it. I haven't watched it. Elliot being a big Troughton fan, so I got it so he could see it. But I just haven't been excited by the animations probably since maybe Macra.
Yeah, I think Macra was good.
Or Evil was probably good.
Yeah.
The last one I really got into.
I mean, weirdly... I mean, this is obviously going to be a subject for another one of our podcasts. I am actually pretty excited for the Toymaker animation. I think
we'll have to review
that's
it.
That's something different. At least that's something different. Back to me. This is going to be.
Here's Friday night at Gallifrey. You do anything after your panel, or
I got incredibly drunk by mistake.
Okay, in LobbyCon.
Yeah. In LobbyCon, yes, yeah. Which was fine. That's how it should be at LobbyCon.
Some Daleks slip you a Mickey or something? Or?
They did. Well, I ended up buying everyone drinks. I spent about $200.
Whoa!
I know. apologies for my... my bank account is now groaning with horror at me. It's a tab. I'll buy you a drink.
Yeah, so. That could have been placed in the dealer's room.
I know. Well, exactly. And honestly, the drinks were... it was like $15 for a drink.
Whoa!
It was ridiculous. I mean, I'm not joking. With a tip...
Well, right. It's LA prices in a hotel. Yeah, you're...
In a convention session where, like, an idiot will just put their car behind the bar and keep on drinking.
Yep.
I mean, there were a couple of fans that I was talking to who actually had basically bottles of vodka in their pockets and were just, you know, just drinking at the bar without actually buying anything at the bar.
Pro tip.
Which was doable because there were no bar staff.
Huh.
They were really understaffed. It was really frustrating.
They didn't put Derek Jacobi behind the bar?
Well, you know who did want to go behind the bar was Brian Croucher, who was very irritated.
Yeah.
And he's a big lad.
Yep.
And he's kind of frightening. I wouldn't have been a member of the bar staff who was at the end of Brian Croucher's ire that he wasn't being served. Because, you know, he's used to a pub where, you know, you click your fingers and you bang on the bar and someone brings you a pint.
Mm-hmm.
Not so in the LA hotel. And, sorry, talking about bars and being drunk, Kevin McNally.
Oh, yes.
Was a massive no-show. And that was the talk of Friday evening. Like, well, where's Kevin? And, you know, he obviously, there was some kind of fracas in the bar on Thursday evening, which involved Kevin throwing a punch. And then getting arrested and being taken downtown and then having to be bailed out. Bailing himself out $40,000, which means it was probably a lot more than a punch. And then apparently snuck back into the hotel trying to get some signatures and the hotel threw him out and I don't know where he is now. I have been kind of randomly Googling his name from time to time to see whether there's any updates and there aren't. But that was a real shame because I was actually looking forward to meeting and hearing Kevin McNally talk because he is an actor who's been in not only in Doctor Who but in a whole bunch of cool and interesting things.
He was in I, Claudius too. Right.
And, you know, obviously I can't stand Pirates of the Caribbean, but he's been in big franchises, but obviously, sadly, has an alcohol problem, like a lot of people do. So, you know, which is a real shame. And I'm, you know, people have been ridiculous about him on Twitter, and I won't kind of
Right. Well, it's not
rehearsed kind of Twitter stuff. But, you know, I think he's an interesting actor. I think a lot of actors have issues. And it's a shame that I wasn't able to meet him and hear him speak about what he does. And so there you go.
Yep. Anyway. Well, a little bit of excitement. First time at Gallifrey, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. And then,
Saturday.
This is really taking a lot of time. Anyway, Saturday. So we had a shakedown. A revisiting of Keith Barnfather. I think it was Keith Barnfather. I can't remember. Anyway, you know, the Shakedown show. Mm-hmm. That was kind of interesting because there was certainly an implication from the stage that there might be a Wilderness Years box set.
There has to be.
Which will include potentially things like Shakedown.
Yeah, I would be surprised by that just due to rights, and the BBC can't make as much money that way.
Well, the implication from the stage is that that is being discussed and that may not be as much of an issue as people think. So that would be cool.
Yeah. I wonder if they'd throw on Dimensions in Time then, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe, I don't know, maybe with more money flowing into the show, there's more money for lawyers, which is all that rights is, basically, is paying lawyers.
Yeah, you'd have to do the Curse of the Fatal Death.
Yeah.
You'd want that. Yeah. That'd be interesting.
It would be. I think it would be nice to have all that stuff in one place.
Yeah, you'd have McGann on the box because you'd have the TV movie and then all the peripheral stuff.
Yeah, you'd have, you know, Wartime and Shakedown and whatever that one with the Yeti was called.
Do you think what was the one where they had Nicola and Colin Baker? Was it The Stranger?
Oh, The Stranger, and there was like that
was almost
thing.
Like soft porn. One of them was almost soft porn. I can't remember.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I mean, Keith Barnfather was there. I didn't have a chance to speak to him at all. But, you know, I think it was interesting. So, yeah, I mean, maybe not. Maybe not.
We'll see. I think that's probably more doable than a box set for, like, season 3.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
Well, I guess, yeah, we'll see what they do with that. I think inevitably we're going to see a Dalek Master Plan animation that will hopefully not disappoint people.
Right,
and
right.
That will be the centerpiece of a season 3
right.
box set. But right, we'll right, see. Right.
Yeah, we'll see. What did I do after that? I'm looking through I was a bit hungover, to be honest.
Did you have a coffee clutch that day?
You know, I realized my coffee clutch clashed with the Alex Kingston interview, so I'm afraid I dumped my coffee clutch.
You ghosted Ray Holman.
I ghosted Ray Holman. I'm sorry, Ray. Next time, man, I'll be there for you. But I wanted to see Alex interviewed, and I wanted to see her first interview, so that was a lot of fun. I'm trying to see what else I did during that day. Well, that's when I got all the Blake 7 signatures.
Oh.
So I queued up for quite a long time to get Croucher and Nivette and Jan Chappell's signatures, which were actually more expensive than I thought they were going to be. But it was nice to have their signatures. And now I have a Blake 7 annual with like 3 cool signatures in it. So that was fun.
Getting signatures, getting pictures, that all takes time away from other things.
It does. And I always forget that it's going to cost me money. And I mean, I don't mind giving $30 to Jan Chappell for her signature, but then I also do mind. I mean, good luck to her for taking my money, but actually that's quite a lot of money. So I think maybe, I don't know, next year I might be a bit more circumspect about who I really kind of focus on getting signatures from.
Yeah, just don't put your credit card behind the bar and you'll be okay.
Well, that's there you are. There's a strong lesson there.
Hip flasks next year.
Did the live commentary, Village of the Angels. That was a lot of fun. That was just Akinola and Holman, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
Because obviously McNally wasn't there. Uh-huh. And that was pretty good. That was pretty fun. That was, you know, that was kind of relaxing. Because, I mean, everyone says is the best episode of Flux. And it was nice to sit down and kind of watch an episode of Who and have people kind of talk about it. And no great revelations. They obviously both really enjoyed working on it, so...
Both Ray Holman and Sagan Akinola are more on the production side behind the scenes rather than acting. So yeah, without McNally there, kind of an interesting choice that they did that. Kept that as a commentary, but I suppose if everyone is scheduled.
It was program A, you know. I mean, what else are you going to do, basically? Mm-hmm. So Alec Kingston was a fun interview. I dipped my head at the crafters meet up because mm-hmm. to see if there are any other Dalek customizers, but there weren't, so that was a shame. And then on to again another strong night at the bar, drank slightly less on Saturday, mm-hmm. and then straight into Sunday, dipped mm-hmm. in at the auction. I donated a couple of pieces to the auction, so I was interested to see how that went. Spent a little bit of time at the Big Finish Productions preview. They're just producing a lot more things.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that was when Hay Ellery said that they had Baker programmed up until 2030.
Sure.
Very much made sure that I was there for Jeff Jerkovic's panel with the composers.
How'd that go?
That was fascinating. That was great. I know so little about composing, mm-hmm. how that works, but it was very interesting because these are all kind of journeymen composers,
right.
who their job is composing music for things.
Mm-hmm.
They were very kind of explicit, saying, like, you know, the only advice that we could give anybody who wants our job is be a nice guy who's easy to get on with.
good advice for anything.
Exactly. You know, if you're a dick about your music and precious about it, and, you know, always like, no, it has to be like this rather than like that, no one's going to hire you. That was actually kind of interesting because, you know, as far as I'm concerned with music, it's very kind of composers are artists, and
right.
what they do is incredibly well. I believe you've been spending a lot of time recently in the company of Beethoven.
Yes, who actually was a jerk and really hard to get along with, and it was his way or the highway.
Exactly.
But the thing to take away from that is you're not Beethoven. There's only one Beethoven. And that role has already been fulfilled. So be a nice guy and
be a nice
easy
guy
to work with.
And everything needs music. Games need music. TV needs music. Streaming needs music. Movies need music. Commercials need music. There's a lot of music. There's a lot of demand out there. And if you're skillful and you can do and you can write the music and that you're easy to get along with, yeah, you've got work. So, mm-hmm. you know, to go for it. I thought that was kind of interesting. And Jess was a great interviewer. He did an excellent job.
Super.
You know, he's very gracious and intelligent and knows the right questions to ask. So that was good.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Vought panel that I went to that was great. And, that's it. There was the Cutaway Comics presentation, Program D on Sunday. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much the last panel I went to before the kind of closing ceremony thing, which was actually also very good. I love the kind of video that they do that kind of shows you all the who that has happened in the previous year. And that was a lot of fun. And there are some really amazing Kickstarters coming up from Cutaway Comics. So Gary Russell was there and Gareth Kavanagh and Ian Winterton, who does a lot of writing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of great comics coming up. They've just finished a Kickstarter on a Hinchcliffe book. And they are going to be doing books on each mm-hmm. of the, for want of a better word, showrunners throughout the complete run of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And they started out with Hinchcliffe because obviously, you know, he's a
big name.
Still alive and is a big name. And I actually had not contributed to that Kickstarter because I've got enough Doctor Who stuff at this point. But talking to Gareth, and I spent a little bit of time with him at the bar afterwards, and he's, again, absolutely charming man. They're really looking at each episode from a completely different perspective,
mm-hmm.
And they've got, he said, you know, the way he was talking, they have some really interesting writers. They got someone, an academic, Asian academic, writing about Talents of Wang Chiang. And
really, that would be interesting.
Being hypercritical about how that was done. And then Philip has the writer replies the wrong way to put it, but also then Philip contextualizes those essays. Mm-hmm. So it seems like actually it was a Kickstarter I should have contributed to, and it will be a book that I may very well pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Gareth's, I mean, they didn't have any with them, obviously, because they're not done yet. But he said he'd probably be bringing some to the next Gallifrey. So
now, did Gareth Kavanagh talk about the meeting on the Commons, the animation that they did for the latest 4-4?
Yeah, and again, you know, the two animations that they have in that 4-4 fanzine are excellent and fascinating, and an example of how you can do animation in an interesting way at a low cost, as long as you're producing it for free and doing it in your own time. And I think that the takeaway was, yes, you know, you can do it, but the advantage that VorpVorp has over, say, the BBC is that people can spend as much time as they like doing it because it's a personal passion project, and because it's not for profit, no one's paying anyone for any rights. And that's where, you know, that's where it becomes difficult to do the animation.
So Mel Meanley was the animator, I think, for that. And he did episode one of The Celestial Toymakers in a different style, but similar artistic flair. He's a very good young animator.
Right.
And was there any talk about how, or, you know, I guess Meeting on the Commons is animating the first chapters of Doctor Who and an Exciting Adventure with the Daleks. And right. Is there more things planned like that?
You know, the presentation was about the cutaway comics aspect of VorpVorp rather than the next issue. I mean, they talked about the current issue of VorpVorp. They didn't talk about what's coming next.
Okay.
The main thing that's coming next is that they're going to be doing a major kind of coffee table style book on the character options action figures, which, as regular listeners to this podcast will already know, I'm a huge fan of, and that I found incredibly exciting, because it's not going to be a kind of, you know, a David Howe kind of here are the values of all the figures style book.
Right.
It's going to be an art book, which is really going to be looking at the art of designing and manufacturing these individual figures, and also having top flight images of each, and also covering the packaging. So very exciting. And at the bar, Gareth and I were talking about there should be a panel next year at Gallifrey about figures and figure modding, which is something I'm really interested in working on.
Right.
I mean, I think that's something that I will be putting forward as a potential panel for next year's Gallifrey, you're trying to get Gareth involved. And obviously, that's something that Gareth would, I think, hopefully want to be involved in. And so that was a lot of fun talking with him.
Interesting that they can pitch this as a freebie, the animation as a freebie, so there's no money being exchanged. But if I was a lawyer, it'd be kind of fuzzy because it does come with the VorpVorp magazine, which is, you know, more a research and commentary look at Doctor Who, but then you have original content which you're giving away. It seems to cross a line at some point, but I guess they can do that because it's the animation, etc., is labeled free.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't kind of talk about the legal aspects of the whole thing. Again, talking to Gareth Kavanagh, I mean, it's clear that one of his pieces of expertise/skills is the legal aspect of all this.
Right.
And that he's worked in performance and worked in theatre and worked in entertainment management, et cetera, and knows what can be done and what can't be done in a very, very kind of, maybe not detailed way, but certainly he has a very good grasp of the big picture. And I think that's what has made VorpVorp the huge success that it is. You know, they have great writers. The design by Colin Brockhurst is superb. But I think they also, they know what can be done and what can't be done.
They know where the line is and where they can...
They know where the line is.
Skate up to it, yeah.
So again, a great conversation with Gareth about, you know, collecting art and art collecting. And, he has a big collection of comic art. And one of his productions in Manchester was the Halo Jones adaptation from 2000 AD, and he has a Halo Jones page and I have a Halo Jones page, and so we talked about 2000 AD comic collecting, and he very much encouraged me. I was offered a work of art that I was reluctant to buy because it was so expensive, and he encouraged me to actually spend that money and buy that work of art, so I'm blaming him for the fact that I got literally no money now. But no, it was super fun to meet him. And it's funny, the kind of Gallifrey experience is actually going up to people in the bar after a day's conning and spending time with interesting people. Being able to hang out with Lena and hang out with Jess was huge, was great fun. Hang out with Gareth was great fun, and just meet other fans. There was another Minnesota fan that I met, and that was fun to meet that guy, who was a friend with Jess, and we were kind of bonding over Minnesota Doctor Who fandom and console room and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, no, it was a good time. It was a good time.
Yeah. Are you going to go to console room one of these years?
You think I might, actually, now, having heard more about it. I kind of demurred because I like to melt into the background. Mm-hmm. And a console room, there's no one here apart from me and two other people. That's going to be embarrassing. But, you know, yeah, I think I might. I think I might dip my toe into console room.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to touch base after you do.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're off to Blighty next, I guess. So
I am, yes.
No moss is growing under your feet.
No, I'm literally leaving tomorrow for the great Great Britain, the Kingdom of Great Britain, Northern Ireland. So that'll be fun. And I am seeing a couple of exhibitions, Doctor Who themed exhibitions while I'm over there, which will be exciting. Meeting some Doctor Who friends over there, as well as my family and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll probably touch base after you go to the... is it some of the anniversary year?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a big Doctor Who art show at the Museum and Gallery in Weston-super-Mare, which is kind of North Somerset, which is not that far from where I'm staying in Cirencester. And then there's also... there's a major kind of BBC effects exhibition at the museum in Gunnersbury in kind of northwest London. I'll be obviously spending a couple of days in London. I'll be making sure that I go up to Gunnersbury and see that show. So those are the two shows.
Was the exhibit at Supermare extended? Because I thought that was ending.
Yeah, so that was going to close in February, which was like, missed it. But they've extended it till April.
Oh, excellent. That works out perfectly.
They must have been reading my mind. And hoping to meet up with, again, a friend of mine, Matt Carter, who is a big collector of Doctor Who art and is a commercial director. And we might try and see that exhibition together. So, and then the Gunnersbury one, I'm probably going to whiz up on my own.
Excellent. Well, you'll have to report back once you see those exhibits, because they sound fascinating. I really would have liked to have seen the... seen the 60 years of art at the one that they're doing at Supermare.
Yeah, no, it's certainly with the pictures I've seen, they've really done an excellent job in terms of presenting it. I'm incredibly jealous. That is an exhibition that I would love to have curated, but, you know, obviously I haven't.
Well, maybe you need to pitch your Summer of Doctor Who location venues that we pitched a while back on the pod.
Yeah, good, yep. You never know. You never know. Right. Anyway, so yeah, so that's me. I'll be gone for a month, but we'll still be podding, so everyone will know what we're up to.
Yeah. We won't have a long hiatus. We'll touch base. All right. I think that's
a complete pod. I hope our listener found it interesting to hear me ramble about what I did for 3 days in LA.
Are Gallifrey 2025 tickets on sale yet?
Not yet. I sadly will be picking one up because I think I'm addicted to the whole thing. Don't know where the money's going to come from to pay for it, but I can work it out.
Yeah, well, maybe crank out some AI-generated art and get the plebs to buy it.
There you go, exactly. exactly. Yeah, and it coincides nicely with meeting, we're going to stay with family in Southern California. So that's how it kind of works for me. So
yeah, it works well. Yeah. All right.
Awesome. Well, there you go. It's a pod.
Thank you for listening to episode 242 of the Metabulous 2 podcast. I have been hearing all about this year's Gallifrey from Ben.
And I've been recovering from my massive alcohol and financial hangover with David.
Yeah, wish I could help you with that. Mix up the Jeeves special drink there for you.
Corpse Reviver. Yeah.
Right. Have safe travels to the UK and talk soon.
Thank you very much and farewell. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Goodbye.